Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, this is the audio version of the Cultaholic Classic Nitro Review. You can watch the video version and take part in a future episode by going to patreon.com/cultaholic.
It's showtime, folks!
This is where the big boys play, huh?
Woo! And look at Goldberg! He's ready!
Oh, hell yeah!
It's going to be the biggest battleground in the history of our sport.
Cultaholic Classic Nitro Review. Here we are again, back once again with some ill behaviour, going back through every episode of Nitro ever because apparently we were awful in a previous life. Who be we? I've been fake Geordie and radio presenter.
It does make you wonder, doesn't it?
I think I was horrible. Yeah. I think I was maybe like a soldier for a terrible army, and this is my penance.
You pass away. I kicked a chicken. You move into the fifth dimension, and they're just like, yeah, you're going to watch WCW. I was just following orders. So we've heard that before, son.
I think during Game of Thrones time, I kicked a chicken.
Oh, Chicken Chaser.
Yeah, I'd be Chicken Chaser Tom Campbell with fellow Chicken Chaser and former WCW kid Sound Driver.
Chicken Chaser. I can't remember what my fable nickname was, but it was not Chicken Chaser.
Can you get a...
I got super evil and like got really powerful with the wings and the horns and everything. And then I became Chicken Chaser again because it was just hilarious.
Look at you pulling back fable.
Oh, it's coming back.
Is it?
Yeah, they're doing like a whole reboot and everything.
I missed that meeting.
Yeah.
How, what, on the Xbox?
Windows and Xbox, I imagine.
I really liked Fable because it was one of those, it was very early on in those games where you went, you can be a goodie or a baddie.
Back when I could semi-trust Peter Molyneux because I was a kid and I didn't understand the wider world of his games and what would come. But yeah, the Fable 1 through 3, I adore. Like, 4, I'm hoping is going to be banging, and you know it's in the right hands. Microsoft know how big it can be.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's exciting, man.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot.
I just want black and white to come back as a VR game, though, because imagine being able to pick up your little people and just swing them around and fling them out to sea when they do something you don't like.
Oh, you monster! I love black and white.
Molyneux, stop making random games and get black and white on VR. Go
Listen,
on.
Molyneux.
I know you don't own the rights anymore, Molyneux.
Go and get the rights. And while you're at it, Theme Hospital.
And promise me like 50 things that don't make the cut. That's the big thing with the film.
Yeah, just over promise what you're going to give us, please, Peter Molyneux.
But it got me hyped.
Can we still play Black and White anywhere? Is it one of those PC games been lost to the ethers?
No, it like loads of that stuff's on Steam now.
Ah, that's
like,
cool.
You can play like SimCity 2000 still. And yeah.
See, the original God mode was black and white.
Black and white, it was populous beforehand, right? Which was Molyneux again.
Yeah, like, but I think God mode was...
In terms of like the full-blown God mode, black and white was perfect.
Yeah, because you were literally a god and you could do miracles and throw people and they'd worship you more or hate you more. I love that stuff. How's your week been?
Yeah, it's been all right. Yeah. Went to Magic Weekend Saturday, got... With my mates who are Wigan fans, we were sat in the Wigan enclosure on the Gallagher end, and Wigan were doing all right against St Helens, which, I mean, if you don't know rugby league, it's a pretty beefy rivalry. Mm-hmm. But I'm just there with my mates who are Wigan fans, and Wigan kind of threw it away at the last minute. Everything went a bit sideways. St Helens won, and then in the midst of all of this, as St Helens were making the comeback, there were Castleford fans behind us. And there were like 2 or 3 arrests because they just started kicking off and like hurling abuse, and the Wigan fans obviously bit. And then there were a couple of really drunk people in front of us just getting all of the laser death stares who were just like standing up and just started singing St. Helens songs. And it was like this old bloke who was with him was like, sit down, like grabbing him by his t-shirt sleeve and everything. So yeah, that was a fun, eventful.
For those who don't know, let's describe the Magic Weekend. So it's like a rugby weekender, isn't
it? So let's describe rugby. So egg-shaped ball comes in 2 types. So you've got Union, which is like more of a battle. If somebody like gets tackled with the ball, you continue play and it goes on. League, it's sort of like the American down system in NFL. Like you get so many goes. So, you know, once you go to the ground, everybody kind of breaks off and then the game goes again. So it's a lot faster, a lot harder hitting. But the Magic Weekend, it's 6 games a day over 2 days at St. James's Park or wherever they hold it. And it's very loud, very boozy, and very violent.
So full on like rugby spectacular.
Yeah,
that just pulls in casuals and hardcore.
I've seen several like viral videos from Magic Weekend, but the Superman punch one. It looks like that was then as well.
Was that for the Magic Weekend?
Yeah, because they're outside a bar next to St. James's, and I'm sure one of them's in a league top. And it was like, oh, buddy.
It's a shame because rugby tends to bring in
eats shit.
A nicer quality fan, like a little less aggressive. But
it differs, but you know, when you've got like heated rivalries taking place, and you've got, you know, league tends to be, I don't want to generalize this, but league tends to have quite leery fans, whereas Union tends to be a bit more kind of, oh, well, we didn't do well today. But, you know, there's fans like that in all sports, isn't there? But it's just sort of league has a bit of a reputation for being a bit argy-bargy, a bit fighty, bit drinky. It's a lot of fun, unless you're on the receiving end of it.
then it's not so much fun.
Yeah.
There
was a beautiful moment, though, where the St. Helens fans and Wigan fans around us agreed that it was most important that they stay for the Leeds game so they can boo Leeds because they all hate Leeds.
Oh,
and it was like, yeah.
That's the
joining
true spirit
together
of sport.
Through a dislike of Leeds.
My enemy's enemy is my friend.
Yeah.
A true sporty weekend, because you were at the Magic Weekend.
Yeah.
Was that Saturday night? Were you at that?
Yeah, Saturday. Yeah. Went down Steph's and chilled after that.
Nice. Because I was at the Anarchy Brewery for North Wrestling on Saturday
night.
I saw.
You made a big return.
I did a little run in as a ring announcer for the night. Just a little surprise for the anniversary
show. How
does
it feel having your first wrestling retirement do what wrestling retirements do?
Well, I'm glad I did it in the same month that Ric Flair's last match is happening. That felt appropriate. To go, I'm retired. Not really. Here I am. I enjoyed it. I'm not going to be back full time. It was just a little dip in the water for the anniversary. I got time, mate. Yeah. Like, literally, I said the next, they announced the next show, and I went,
there's at least 4 hours you spend a week sleeping. So
I mean, I could squeeze something in there.
Yeah, he sleeps for the dead.
I did say to Bowers, Andrew Bowers, who runs North, I said, look, just full disclosure, you've just announced the next show. I'm flying on my holiday that day. I definitely can't do it. If I did, Alex would kill me. So definitely can't do that one.
But Alex. I've got to go.
Go do a show back soon. I'll meet you there.
Take the luggage.
I'll meet you in the Maldives. Good luck, Amy. I got to meet Scotty Hugh Hottie. That was cool. What a guy.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He's a Geordie now. Scotty is a Geordie.
Good. Scotty better be a Geordie for life.
Yeah, he's brilliant. You will see a video doing the rounds from North. Because it was Scotty Dio Hottie versus Joe Hendry.
Yeah.
And Joe Hendry's back on the indies and the theme songs are back.
Yes.
The custom music from Joe Hendry's back and he does a brilliant cover of Bon Jovi, Living on a Prayer, called Shite People's Elbow, which is a tribute to the Worm. The Worm's too slow. Whoa! A shite people's elbow! It's amazing. He came out dressed as Scotty. Oh, mwah. Scotty loved it. Scotty bloody loved it. He loves Newcastle. He says he's coming back.
He better.
He's nice. And Axel Tischer was there as well. Yeah. The Axeman from Imperium. Rocked up. It was
nice.
A good night at North. Good night at North. And then I had to leave very early because the next morning I was on BBC Radio Newcastle interviewing somebody from the Jesus Christ Church of Latter-day Saints. So it was a varied weekend.
How did that one go?
Fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was fine. Because the Book of Mormon's on at Newcastle.
Yeah, that's what I figured it was related to. So it was like, how tonally was it?
They're lovely. Everybody I've met from Jesus Christ Church at Latter-day Saints, they're always really polite. They're always really friendly. And they were keen to say that they're outside the venue. They're not protesting it.
Likewise, there was...
They're fact-finding.
Everybody I've met from the church has been awesome, except for this one guy who was a rival... He was in a rival company to like my company at the time, my friend.
Right.
And I don't know, there was something sinister about how happy he was as he just kind of took work from you. And it was like, oh, okay.
There was like an edge to
stay clear of these people. You can have those clients.
Oh, so he was a bit edgy with you.
Not so much edgy. It was just sort of like, it was like unsettlingly polite. And it was like,
oh, like yeah. That's it.
Kind of like, yeah, I don't know. It was just kind of a bit like, I can't be mad at you because you're so nice, but can you stop taking my clients, please?
You should be very wary of people that are nice all the time. And you might think, what about you, Tom? No, I'm an arsehole sometimes, so yeah, I'm all right.
You get three drinks in him and you've got to make sure he's just away from everybody else. You just start swinging.
I'm a piece of shit. I really am. I won't want to be around me. But we are back in time now, 1996. That's why Sam Driver and I are here. We're watching every episode of Monday Nitro from the very beginning. I know. It's nice to get you away from your editing.
We've watched one episode about 55 times now. Yeah. It's fucking ridiculous.
For Sam, it's just a nice little break for his eyes from his editing suite.
just to come and watch. What I'm filling my eyes with is just pain. Just painful on every level.
It's a joy.
This week we are. Oh no, we don't get into the show straight away, do we? We do all of the lead in bumps.
We do the lead in bumps. Yes. I'll give you a bit of lead in bumps.
All right.
What I'll do is I'll tell you what's been happening in the wrestling world. I'll give you a little bit about the real world first of all. Number one in the US Billboard charts is Mariah Carey. Sweet day.
If you could just fucking get off top. It's starting to feel like we record the same podcast about the same episode every week. Is the Earth song still at top of the UK charts?
No.
Oh, thank God.
It's not.
Oh, what we got?
George Michael, Jesus to a Child.
It's not great, but I'll take it.
First of six singles from his third studio album, Older. Esther Ranson revealed after his death because she founded
Esther Ranson.
Yeah, Esther Ranson getting a mention on the Classic Nitro review. What a joy that is. Well, that's the forbidden door, that is. She founded Childline, and she revealed that George Michael donated all of the royalties from this single to Childline.
Yeah, that's class.
George Michael was quietly a really lovely guy. We've heard lots of this since his death. Like, a lot of money went to charity. He helped a lot of people out. Didn't make a fuss about it. And then he's the right sort of guy.
Nice.
Leaving Las Vegas number one in the UK box office.
Yeah. Banging film.
Yeah. $49.8 million gross at the box office.
On an insanely small budget.
US number one, From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah.
Good.
We're currently in the middle of the Tarantino wave. So yeah, we've had Reservoir Dogs. We've had Four Rooms. We've had Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we've quite reached Jackie Brown as Jackie Brown's Summer of 96.
Yes.
I think, so Tarantino, of course, wrote From Dusk Till Dawn. So, it's sort of not surprising. It's a banging movie.
Yeah, I love that it starts off as one thing and halfway through just jump cuts into something completely different.
Anything that completely subverts your expectations is the boy. Like, the film Kill List is one of my all-time favorites, and it starts off with, like, these two old kind of mercenary blokes, like in their 40s, they're not really in the armed forces anymore, but they've been picking up some side work here and there, doing dodgy things and getting rid of certain people and making a mint doing it. But it's been a while, and the lead character kind of needs to get back out there and earn some money. And so they've got this list of people they've got to take out. But slowly as it progresses, it just gets weirder and weirder until there's just this flash change. And it's like,
nice.
And the entire genre of the film just flips, and it's just like, this is amazing, absolutely amazing.
That's great when that happens, though. Yeah. When you get something like that just completely twisted. Do you watch Inside Number 9?
No, not particularly.
Like, you like Inside I need to Number
watch.
9?
Everybody's like, you need to watch it. Like, I'm a big fan of Pemberton and just League of Gentlemen in general. So anything they do, magical.
It's very much your cup of tea because it is. It varies in terms of tone, but it always subverts.
Yeah.
And I never quite, I think maybe on two occasions I've seen the twist coming out of all 30 episodes.
Well, I'll check it out if you check out the films of Ben Wheatley.
Ben Wheatley?
Yeah.
All right, I'll put a pin in Ben Wheatley.
Do it, because he's fucking awesome. He needs more.
A pin in Ben Wheatley now. Golden Globes were held yesterday on this particular day. One noteworthy thing from the Globes, there is the Mr. Golden Globe, who's a young person, normally a boy or a girl, who assists in the Golden Globe Award presentations by handing trophies to the winners. This year, the Mr. Golden Globe was a young boy by the name of Freddie Prinze Jr.
Never heard of him. Not going to go far in acting or the wrestling world.
He certainly will never write for the wrestling.
No, and he'll never think about starting up his own promotion or star as, say, Fred in a Scooby-Doo movie.
That was silly. Of course, that'd be a ridiculous thing to
Terrible.
Do.
He's only good at holding trophies. And I bet he nearly dropped one because he'd have had nervous, sweaty hands.
Oh, he's got the sweatiest of all the hands.
That's what I've heard. No, it is weird, though, isn't it?
Like, I love stuff like that.
Where, you know, it's like you'll see just a face And it's not till years later. It's when you see like the shots of Sasha Banks and stuff meeting stars or current, like anybody on the current WWE roster at like fan events or in the crowd. Mm. It's like, whoa, this is like surreal.
I get quite excited now knowing, like, you know, you see these people who, like, you know, Triple H's entrance where you had, like, Sasha Banks, Alexa Bliss and Charlotte Flair all on the throne with Triple H. I get quite excited now when you see, like, those extras around a wrestler and you think, ooh, one of those going to be
no, because you've got thing. The Cena one with, like, 400 Cenas and what? We got Punk out of that?
No, Punk was the sidecar.
Punk was the sidecar, yeah. So what happened to the 400 Cenas? Does anybody know what happened
I
to
believe
the 400
that's
Cenas?
AEW now.
I need an update on the 400 Cenas.
Yeah, at least 3/4 of them got cast in the 300.
I was going to say, could 300 Spartans take John
one
Cena
massive duck
leading the Ottoman Empire?
Oh no, they don't.
I don't
get
think there
down.
Would be an Ottoman Empire with John Cena leading it. They're too nice. Or would it be one of those situations where when you give him ultimate level of power, he just turns evil?
Oh, so like it would corrupt
Cena,
them.
Yeah, in a way, because he would be like, I'm doing something right. And he'd decide on like a good thing and he would make that his mission. But then it would ultimately corrupt him and then there'd have to be a Cena slayer.
No, I don't know whether he's corruptible.
I think he is. Ultimate power.
Because he's kind of got ultimate power and he uses it for good. There was that Ukrainian boy who got forced out of his home.
Yeah.
And was a massive John Cena fan and couldn't understand sort of what was going on, but sort of comforting John Cena. So John Cena chartered a flight to go and see him.
It was incredible. But I think until we see John Cena leading an army of, say, 1,000 Ottoman-era soldiers with berserkers and, you know, all the Frank Miller, you know, style, we need Zack Snyder. That's what we need to do. 302 Cena Boogaloo.
What would that look like? John... John Cena leading the Ottoman Empire.
Make sure that you get that horrible green filter that Zack Snyder just proper loves to rub up against and lick.
That's reminded me. My call to John has reminded me. We get lots of nice messages, don't we, you and I?
Yes.
About this wonderful show that we do. Right? Sometimes...
people actually watch and listen. It's surreal, isn't it?
It's ridiculous. I don't know what you...
Mr. Frosty!
Is there nothing else you could do in that hour?
Connects is awesome.
But here's the thing. Sometimes I get messages through, and I actually haven't prepped you on this, and they get lost in my DMs, in the back end of the DMs, so I don't see them. And then a few months later, I go, oh, gosh, that was cool, right? So, to prevent that from happening again, we now have an official Cultaholic Classic Review mailbag. So here's what we do. If you've got any thoughts on Nitro, anything you want to contribute, maybe you were at a Nitro, maybe you just want to throw some 96
maybe
toys
you ate,
at us.
Maybe you ate at the fucking Nitro Grill in fabulous Las Vegas and you can tell me exactly how that menu was.
Maybe, just maybe, Pasta Mania inflamed your Crohn's and I want to hear
about it. Yeah, it ran wild all over your digestive system, brother. We want to know.
We want
all
this.
The grisly deets.
And you can do that by emailing... classic@cultaholic.com.
Did Hulk Hogan ever grab you from the front row and start just wailing on you as the cameras were looking another direction? And then when, you know, the cameras turned around, he just let go and went, nobody will believe you.
And if he did, tell us, we will believe you 100% and we won't question it.
Yeah. Just anything. Anything you've got. Yeah. Any juicy dirt you've got on Nitro, as you know, it's a very important and timely matter.
Mm.
You pass it our way. We'll make sure to report on it.
classic@cultaholic.com.
Were there 5 peppies? Nobody knows.
There must have been more.
There might have been. Let's get tinfoil hat on the go.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Tinfoil hat and more. There you go. Drop us an email, classic@cultaholic.com. Do it, you cowards. let's take a look at the wrestling world throughout the week. Eric Bischoff has been on the WCW hotline.
Surprise, surprise.
$1.29 an hour. He's responded.
An hour?
A minute.
I was going to say, it's very generous.
An hour's a bargain, isn't it? Wowzers.
That's Eric.
That's Wi-Fi in an airport.
What did you have for dinner?
He'd stretch that conversation. Bischoff responded to the WWF
skits. If they're not allowed to hang up on you.
You've got to
hang on,
stay.
I'm just nipping to the loo. And just put it on the side for 20 minutes. Occasionally just bang a pan near it.
Bischoff's just got to sit there for an hour. Fucking, I've got stuff to do. Can you hear me pissing, Eric? Yes, I can hear you pissing, Jonathan.
It's world championship level.
The greatest piss in the history of our sport. So Bischoff has responded to the WWF skits in a segment with Mike Tenay on the hotline.
Yeah.
He says that he didn't think it was a... So he talked about that and a number of other things. But first of all, he talked about going head-to-head with Monday Night Raw, which he didn't think was a gamble because he said, our company's just got better talent, so of course
we're going to win. It's got loads of guys, right? And nothing can ever go wrong when you have this many egos in one building.
Exactly. It can't be no problem
it
at all.
It just means more ideas, guys. Mm.
He says the pay-per-view buy rates in wrestling have been dropping for the last 18 months, so it's not Nitro's fault that the ratings
are going
down. Well,
the business is on its ass.
It is on its ass.
Like,
it's a tough
across
time.
The board, it's on its ass. So when people are kind of posting good numbers, it is something to be kind of held up and looked at because, you know, at this time, wrestling is dog shit, largely, at the elite level. It's dog shit.
She's the shit of the dog. As for the billionaire Ted skits, Bischoff says, clearly it's desperation.
Yep.
Clearly it's a desperate man doing desperate things. And he believes the best defense in WCW's case from now on is an aggressive offense. And he's going to continue pushing on with an aggressive offense. He's not going to slag off WWF anymore.
No, not for about another 2 months. But we've got, he's right in this because ultimately the last thing you can possibly do is make fun of somebody or try to. And, you know, they've run out of every form of recourse. They can't just sign away a WCW wrestler as much as they'd probably love to have done because Sting wouldn't have left. And, you know, you'd have to get somebody like a Sting or a Flair again. It's largely just, you know, they're trying to do this whole new generation thing that's not panning out. And, don't watch those guys because they're old and they suck. Way! So you were using them 2 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. They were fine. They were fine a minute ago. Now they're shit. Okay, hon. Bischoff not happy with the Goldust gimmick, saying, Vince, if that's the epitome of your creativity, I feel sorry for you.
Oh, just you fucking wait, Eric. Just you wait. Yeah, we get the weird era with the artist formerly known as, but Goldust is just, it goes on to become one of the most enduring, loved gimmicks. I mean, Christ, when he made the return, was it like 2014, 2015 or something? And it was just like, shit, it's Goldust back. And it was, I don't know. Like,
I do believe.
It's largely a pretty shit gimmick. I'm a, you know, Hollywood wannabe. I am painted all gold, like an award statue. Everything's dripping in gold. That's about as deep as it gets. And he's a bit weird and a bit androgynous. And the rest was just the fans filling in the blanks themselves and making themselves get into a stupor over it.
And I think you're right in terms of it being enduring. Like, yeah. I genuinely, it wouldn't happen because obviously he's very tied to AEW. But if that timpani hit tomorrow or like on an episode of Raw,
yep.
I think there'd be a pop. There'd be love.
I mean, it wouldn't go anywhere, but it would definitely get a pop.
It'd be amazing. Yeah, exactly. They wouldn't do much with it. He continues to... Basically, a lot of what Bischoff says is it's sympathy for Vince McMahon. He says, I feel sorry for Vince McMahon if he has to hire imposters to draw a number on his pay-per-views, referring to the Huckster versus Nacho Man match, which is scheduled for the pre-show at WrestleMania 12.
Which, legally, it has to be because the network that owns... Well, the network that runs WWF is also tied to the network that runs WCW, I believe. And so they went, knock it the fuck off. Stop it. You can't do this on TV. And Vince went, I'll do it on pay-per-view then.
It's more the case of they won't run it on pay-per-view because they would be very likely to have a lawsuit open to them if they're claiming Hulk Hogan and Macho Man on pay-per-view.
They'll do it on the pre-show, which is free. And, you know, it's very much heavily shit and scripted and over the top, as you'd expect, following the skits.
Bischoff ends by saying, Vince McMahon is the Vern Gagne of the 90s, and his time has come and passed.
Oof.
Harsh.
I mean, at one point, you could kind of argue it, but fucking hell, we must be eating that crow now.
Well, he's had paycheck signed off by Vince McMahon for a long time, didn't he? So that said everything, didn't it? Let's look at this episode of Nitro in particular. Backstage, a WWF legend is looking for work. The Iron Sheik is backstage at Nitro in Caesar's Palace, baby. Sheiky baby wants a job.
I'm not up to date on Sheik's injuries or body at this point.
Paggard.
Like, because, he'll have been through a lot. He'd been around before his golden heyday. Mm. And, you know, he had a long run with that kind of big golden heyday at the end. And then, you know, coming in now, it's... The unpredictable nature of the Sheik as well. Could you imagine?
Yeah, I don't think
Could you imagine having to manage just having the chicest part of that roster?
With everything else going on.
You can't control him. He's a one-man force. Like, he will just do whatever he pleases, and you kind of got to move around it. And I think, like... You've already got about six tornadoes going through that locker room like fucking hellfire.
Go
to throw in Sheik is like just dropping a nuclear bomb like right in the middle of just all these tornadoes.
But they would have, if they'd hired him, which they don't.
No, because
they wouldn't have resisted doing a Sheik and Hogan.
Oh, no, they'd have to do it again. But there's nothing stopping Sheik in a landscape quite as free and politically moved as WCW seems to be at this period. There's nothing stopping him just shooting on people because he has genuine, incredible, like, Greco-Roman, amateur, traditional wrestling background. And, yeah, unpredictable, dangerous. God, avoid it as best you can.
I mean, the best way to avoid Sheik is just do power walks to the left. You should be fine. He won't catch you. You mentioned a minute ago...
It's a pretty big reach, like, you have to move pretty... Dash.
I will literally be half an inch further than his reach.
But I'll
press down an 8 and spin dash out of the way. You mentioned about how like WWF could be, you know, what they need to the tide is to have like some big name come over their way, right? Before this match, there was a dark match. Before this show, there was a dark match. Saw Johnny B. Badd getting pinned by the Giant in 8 seconds. And Johnny B. Badd is reportedly very unhappy about his position in WCW because of matches like this. And there's not much time left on Johnny B. Badd's contract. Imagine him jumping ship. That would be wild, man.
Yeah, it'd be crazy, wouldn't it? And, you know, he's got the perfect gimmick. Literally the perfect gimmick.
Yeah.
Vince's favorite, I think, well, one of his favorite musicians of all time, other than AC/DC, is not that AC/DC is a musician and band, but it's Little Richard. And it's such a Little Richard inspired gimmick that Vince, as we know, cannot possibly resist the allure of Johnny B. Badd. And then after he buys him, realizes that all that rapping's gone. And it ain't coming back. It's not allowed back. He can't be Little Richard, Johnny B. Badd. And,
oh, it's a buyer's remorse. But we're close to that point. He's just been squashed by the Giant, and there's no doubt conversations between him and Vince about bringing his thing over.
Mero's, like, up to this point, Johnny B. Badd's over as fuck. He has the credentials as an amateur. He's a Golden Gloves winning boxer.
I want boxing.
Motivational speaking skills. So he can you know, cut promos like nobody's business if required. Mm. But it's just that rapping was... it turned out was just a very important part of it. Yeah. But then again, I think it would have bombed with the audience anyway in about a year's time.
You reckon they would have just got bored of it?
You got a guy coming out with glitter and frisbees while Austin's cutting promos.
Yeah. Go with Wild Man instead. Yeah. Let's go to Nitro from Caesar's Palace.
I've been there.
You've been to Caesar's Palace?
Been to Las Vegas. Been to Caesar's Palace. It's a desolate, barren hellscape that has one-armed bandits and musicals.
Caesar's Palace!
Yes! It's massive. It's absolutely fucking gargantuan. It's scary how, like, within seconds of being in the building, you can't see an exit because, you know, no windows, no anything.
It's designed that way, isn't it?
They don't even know what time of day it is. Mm. They want to kind of keep you there as long as possible. But it's just winding. Like, for us to get to the conference hall for StarCast, the weigh-in at StarCast for Double or Nothing, it was like you'd walk in through the main entrance, you'd kind of cut up and around, back on yourself, up an escalator, along a floor, past a load of tables, up an escalator, and you'd end up in this giant hallway that could hold a plane in it, and then up 5 more escalators or some shit, and then around the corner, and boom, there's like Convention Hall 1. And then like 200 meters down and around another corner was the weigh-in. And it was like, fuck. It was like walking 5 miles to get to something you could see from the outside's windows. Just like,
jeez.
It's just up there.
And that's a very deliberate tactic, isn't it? To snake you in.
I will say it's beautiful. Mm. Like, you just walk around it and it's just opulent. It's just like shit. It's like being literally in a palace. So they nailed that, like, completely.
Palace.
But it's just Jesus. I mean, Christ, there's a balcony where you could just see pools on pools on pools, like heading down the strip and stuff. It's nuts. Like, genuinely, would go back to Vegas, would probably have a bad time, but would go back to Vegas.
Come back with like just your trousers.
We were only there for 2.5 days when we went for work. And so it was a lot to do video wise. So we didn't really get to see much of it. Mm. So I'd like to be able to go see the sights and then be like, right, I'm never going back there again.
Yeah. I can't afford to go back there again.
Well, I came out up like $150 or $170 or something.
But you are one of few that get into Vegas and
video
get out.
Video blackjack, man. Video blackjack's the boy.
Is that the one? The thing is, you'll be tempted when you go back to go straight back to video blackjack.
Yeah, but you got to get the old machines because they only use 2 decks. The newer machines use 8 decks or like 6 decks or something. So it's hard to, like, not that I can count cards or anything. I'm not some kind of super genius, but like, you know, if you've seen an ace, you know, if you've seen a king, and it's like, right, I think I've seen two of those. I'll stand. And you kind of do all right. But it's just fun. Like, I don't know. I went out there with like I think $150 and I was like, hey, I've saved that. That can be gambled away without any complaints.
Yeah. Take a little bit of cash with you. Just
if I'd lost it, I'd still be fucking moaning about it. But
are there any casinos near where we're going? We don't have time, are we? I'm just thinking for our club trip to Cardiff.
Our club trip to Cardiff is probably going to consist of shoot a load of videos, go watch a wrestling show, shoot a load of videos, sleep, train.
Run away again.
Yeah. It's the event stuff is, it's very hard because you want to kind of take in the atmosphere more. You want to kind of do like more stuff while you're there and try and do as much as you possibly can content-wise. And it's just sort of like, you've just got to go. Like, it's the most stressful, busy, horrible thing. But once everything that needs to be done's done, then you can have time. But you've just got to hope it's before bars shut, and you've got to hope it's before whatever time. Otherwise, you're going to be walking around Cardiff at 2 a.m. So
with no shoes on.
Yeah.
It's quite nice because that's why I booked me holiday the weekend after.
Yeah.
So it's like, this year I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to have a few days in the office, and I'm like, right, see you in a few weeks. Back later, potato. So I'm excited. I don't mind just because I'm happy just to, you know, burn the oil all the time, but I'm just going to really burn the oil that weekend because then I'm just going to stop for 2 weeks. I'm very excited. We were talking about our holiday, and I know I've got this rep as just being, don't stop working, always fucking working. When I go on holiday, I am brilliant at stopping. I will just go. Poof.
The only time is I've started getting slightly better at it on my weekends, but like the only time is if I'm out the country. Mm. Like that's where work just disappears.
Because there's like you're out of the country, you can't really help anyway. That's what my dad always said. Like I can't do anything from here anyway, so there's no point worrying about anything. And that's it's that for you, is it? When you just go like.
Essentially, yeah. It's just sort of like I, you know, take work home a lot. So it's like you just got to try and get that mindset. But ultimately, you can't because if you. After a while, like there's got to be a set level of it, of workaholicness, because if not, like, you know, you've got to keep things moving forward. Mm. And I don't ever want to be able to look and say to myself, like, well, if I'd just done that or I'd just done this, it's like, just get it all done.
Yeah.
Get it all done.
That's workaholic. That's workaholier for you.
Yep.
But sort of fun. But when you're away, you're like me, you're very good at just going and stop. Alex thinks she is.
Yeah.
She thinks she is.
Okay.
And she's like, I can't wait. I'm just going to do, no one to lie on the beach. And whatever. I know it'll happen. We'll get 3 days in and I'll be sat on the beach on my third day, perfectly content.
Yep.
I'll have listened to an audiobook. I'll have watched the sunrise and the sunset.
Yep.
And she'll go, now what are we doing? Can we go? Do you want to go hang gliding?
I'm like that.
It's like, no,
I'm like
fine.
That because I want to, like, I don't like wasting time. So like and as much as, you know, a day spent enjoying the beach and the sunset isn't a waste of time, it's like, right, what are we going to do now? Maximize everything. Like if I sleep in for a couple of extra hours, it's like you've wasted time. Get up, do something. You need to do it.
Fine,
like, I need activities and stuff. Like nothing like too mental, but I want to go see some ruins if we're in Greece, say. I want to go look at it, walk around for a day, go to a market, do this. Like rest of the time, fine, but I my brain's just that way where I kind of need a plan and then I can relax. Once I've got the plan, I can kind of cut everything off a bit better.
Could part of the plan be like I could sit in a jacuzzi for 6 hours?
Maybe.
Quite easily.
It's like when me and Steph go to Tokyo, like I'm 100% going to try and catch some form of wrestling show. Hopefully from a company I don't actively watch, so I can just try and enjoy it without thinking about it work-wise. And then on top of that, I want to go see Riki Dozan's like grave site. And there's just wrestling kind of just ties itself into you after a while. So you've just got to kind of, it's all right. You get an hour of this, done. You get an evening of this event, done. So it's like, let's try and find something with an exploding ring and let's go. let's go see something fucking crazy.
Let's go do an exploding ring thing. No rings explode on Nitro this week, but some explosive things happen. Now, strap yourselves in if you're watching this Nitro, because Jesus Christ, the first 18 minutes is just information fucking overload.
Yeah, because
like the world's about to end.
We're kind of prepping for two shows at once. So yeah. There's Clash of the Champions is coming up in this timeline tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
So it's they're kind of building to tonight's action. They're the concept that, oh, there's two world championships on the line and all this stuff and really hammering it in. But, you know, it's all just kicking off. Fucking Conan pops up immediately.
So this is where it all begins. We've got the opening with Mongo, with Eric Bischoff, and with Heenan. And as they're doing the opening spiel, talking about the world title match, the tag title match, here is Conan, the Mexican heavyweight champion.
K-Dog,
straight out. This is Conan's first appearance on WCW television.
For a man that is set to become a mainstay and a genuine feature part of it.
Yeah.
Like, and somebody you actively enjoy whenever he's on screen. It's kind of a weird start, isn't it?
Weirdest of starts.
But completely on brand.
Yeah. We'll talk more about Conan next week when we do Clash of the Champions, but he's out here tonight holding his Mexican Heavyweight Championship, yep, a title he's defending against Psicosis tomorrow night. He says, tomorrow I'll leave just as I came in as Mexico's Heavyweight Champion.
And Psicosis is going to be a blueprint of your destruction. He also said that.
It's a good line. He kind of leaves and there's like a beat and everyone just goes, well, anyway, that was a really interesting bit. And they just went, well, hang on, we've got too many other things to nail in. So carry on. So we go straight to our opening match. Jesus H. Christ, opening match. Ric Flair versus Randy Savage for the WCW World title. A parade of lovely ladies. Seven, in fact. Head to the ring to Savage's music. This is apparently Mind Games for Savage. Over Flair, we get a little wink to the camera from one of them. The one that we get a wink off
is Woman.
Is Woman? What, man?
Who was recently linked to Ric Flair, but God bless you if you can remember it, because they've not mentioned it in a little while.
Savage out after the seven ladies.
And then who comes out?
Oh, after Savage says he's going to be steaming hot tonight. Fuck me! Hulk fucking Hogan! Fucking Savage's shadow! The limpet on Randy Savage's backside. And it is Hogan again.
He essentially says, you are my Bezzy Randers. Please do well. I'm going to beat you later for it, Lel. And then commentary's like, one of these women is Woman. One of these women is Woman. Oh, my God. How's Ric Flair going to react? Oh, Big Liz is coming back next time, too. Oh, my God. Elizabeth's coming back. Oh, one of these women's Woman.
It's just like, what the fuck, man? So as Flair's walking out.
Why is Hogan got to be there?
Because he's just
done this whole, when you win the title, I get first shot, brother. Fucking five times. 5 million times.
Savage can't have the spotlight.
No, but every single
it
time.
It has to be Hogan and
out,
Savage.
It's just fucking booze. And by association, Randy just hanging out with him and allowing him to just make him look like a bitch.
If I were Randy Savage, I'd have knocked Hogan fucking spark out by now.
Hogan has been on top of him for this belt for so long that it looks like Randy's basically just kind of going, all right, Hulkster, you get your match. I'll do whatever you say. And it's just fucking...
Savage is so patient.
I mean, he does, after this, finally fucking puts Hulk in his place a bit, but it's just this entire build with, like, I'm getting the title shot, brother. Oh, it's going to be me versus you. Make sure you get that title, brother. Blah, 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 blah. It's just...
You say put him in his place, but at no point did I see Randy Savage punch Hulk Hogan in the kidneys.
He stopped shy of any physical altercation, but he at least says some fucking truths to him.
Yeah.
And the crowd kind of reacts shockingly for the Hulkster.
Hogan comes out, he tells him to win the match, and then he leaves again. And then, as you say, Eric Bischoff reveals on commentary,
one of these women's Woman!
But as well as that, as well as one of these women being Woman, if only we could tell which one... Who's that it's Pokemon? Like,
one of these women's what? It's the camera is just fixed on Nancy the entire time.
Yeah.
One of these women is what? It's like fucking Jerry Seinfeld.
What's the deal with women? Eric Bischoff reveals on commentary that another woman is coming back. Miss Elizabeth will be reunited with Savage and Hogan tomorrow night at Clash of the Champions.
Which, rightfully so. They're like, they said it would never happen again. Oh my God, we're going to have Elizabeth. And then in order of importance, Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage reunited tomorrow.
Oh, and it doesn't end there, because also we find out that Kevin Green, the American football man, ahead of the superb owl, is going to be in Hogan and Savage's corner as well. Fuck, this show's been on less than 10 minutes. And it's been, hi, I'm Conan. Hey, there's woman. There's some other women. Miss Elizabeth's coming back. Kevin Green's coming in.
How much would a fucking pre-record of somebody just going out to training camp or wherever the hell Kevin Green's based with Mongo or with somebody else just to be like, blah, blah, break it up a bit. Or just do some sort of like satellite call with him or... You can pre-record the fucking lot. Gene's just got to learn the beats of the questions.
It's like they're so anxious about this war that people are going to switch over. We've got to tell you everything now. Can I interest you in everything all of the time? Everything now. Tell you everything now.
But the one good thing here is that this means my favorite ever, or one of my favorite ever backstage WCW segments is mere months away. And it all involves Kevin Green.
Ooh.
It's fucking gold. I can't wait till we get there. It's like the best product tie-in / like inspirational promo thing ever.
Okay. The Observer writes, there's talk of doing an Elizabeth versus woman rivalry. Because what are these women as women? There has been a lot of controversy.
One of these Elizabeths is Elizabeth.
It's like never mind the Buzzcocks, the identity parade.
Jesus.
And one of them is like Jarvis Cocker dressed as Elizabeth.
They're all on like a fake Macho Man's shoulder just going.
Which of these is Elizabeth? There's talk about a rivalry between woman and Elizabeth.
They make you call up as well. It'd be like the WCW hotline's taking votes now.
There's
they drag it out for 9 weeks. I keep interrupting you.
No, that's
drag
fine,
it out
mate.
For 9 straight weeks until we got through all of the 8 imposters and finally the only one left was the real Elizabeth. Oh my God.
Just keep whittling them down. Literally whittling them down. It's a weird mental image that one is. Yeah, so there's a lot of controversy regarding Nancy Sullivan. Since it was first learned, the plan was to make her the new Elizabeth and have her as Savage's manager in a feud with Hogan, presumably with Elizabeth as his manager, because Savage can't even have his own wife.
Well, he couldn't back in the day either. That was the whole problem.
No.
Yeah.
This is interesting stuff. Flair gives woman a woo, man. And tries to dance with her, but she slaps him and he takes a beefy bump off of it, which is quite nice. So we've had information overload. There's Conan. Elizabeth's coming in. There's a title match now.
One of these women's woman.
One of these women's woman.
Kevin Green.
Okay, we can all...
He's a footballer, everybody.
Thank God. We can all breathe now and enjoy the show. Bobby Heenan. Hey, did I hear the Road Warriors are coming back? The fuck? Bischoff going, oh, I was about to say, tomorrow night, Hawk and Animal are here. Fuck, why are they booking this like Clash of the Champions was a surprise visit from your Auntie Glenda? Like, why are they booking this like it's, oh, shit, we've got a pay-per-view in a week. They've had weeks and weeks fuck all.
But they have an hour-long pre-show here, in a sense, that they can... cram it with as much advertisement as possible.
But you could have paced this and you would have
still had
the same effect.
You could have paced it a lot better, but if you front load the show with it, that's the bit people might be in there for initially. So if you get all the shit out the way first, then everybody will flick over to something else or whatever. But they front load all the shit. That's how it works. You get all the information at the start, and then throughout the night, the information is reiterated to you again and again and again through every match. And it's really one of just the worst parts of the whole back and forth. It's just the repetition, the repetition. And it's not all the time, but when it does happen, it's just like, fuck, I know you've got a big show. But just, Jesus, just give me 5 seconds to think.
Yeah, just focus on what's happening in the ring for a minute.
They could have really spent the first fucking 2 or 3 minutes of this match doing it anyway, because it's like watching wrestling underwater. Like, they're so slow. It's so laboredly slow. And it's just like, you could have done it so much, like, so much of your prep for, like, you know, I'm... bring up Kevin Green here, do this there, but they got to front load it, and I get it.
Because people are going to switch over. They want to get all in there for the first commercial
break.
You
just want to say it as much as you possibly can throughout the entire show, just over and over and over and over again, because you never know when people are watching and when they're not, and because, you know, you're trying to hype up this two-day thing you've got going on, which, you know, tomorrow night is Clash of the Old Champs.
But then you think, like... this is where the disconnect is because, okay, if you've got all this stuff, that you all this information that you absolutely, absolutely have to do straight away, there and then, fine, do it. Do we need the bit with the parade of women and one of these women is woman as well? Do we need that? Or do you strip away all of the clutter around the match and then give the information?
Because are you suggesting we don't have a tunnel of women?
I don't think... I'm not against the idea.
You never fucking made it as a 90s booker, mate.
I think we discussed this last week when I said that I think Mongo should have headlined WrestleMania 11.
But they go from Tunnel of Women to Nitro Girls eventually, and that's going to be very awkward for us to sit and watch in this day and age, so...
I'm excited.
Enjoy these days. Enjoy the Tunnel of Women days, because the Nitro Girls days are...
The Tunnel of Women days.
Hey, it's half time. Let's have a dance break. Oh, God. Just bombarding you with as much as they can. Oh, Christ.
Savage attempts to bombard Flair with a topper axe handle as they go to their first break of the night. It's really weird because they try... They're like, we're going to break, but they obviously hold off on the break.
Yeah.
But there's elements already in play, like the graphic, a sound effect.
The graphic's already rolling and the sound effect's already there. And so they have to stop the sound effect. They pause the graphic. Usually the graphic's like the Nitro logo in silver, kind of goes in, or like fills the screen. But you've got that kind of like... whoosh sound, but you kind of hear the build up to the whoosh, and they're just like,
you just fall.
Or somebody's just slamming their hand on the vinyl, just like, or the tape or whatever.
And then once he misses the axe handle and crashes into the guardrail, then
hard cut to break.
It's funny. Live telly. Flair's on the offense when we come back.
No. You're not just gonna gloss over the WCW magazine advert.
I was about to, but please.
You fucking...
I've got...
What?
It's going to play in the commercial break of this podcast, so I didn't completely gloss over it.
Look.
Hit me with it.
It was pure, unadulterated 90s advertisement gold. You start off with a nerdy kid, and he's like at his kitchen table or something, bored with some crap cereal. And then he opens up the WCW magazine, and he's like, wow, oh my God. And then halfway through, like, lightning turns him into Sting, but Sting still has, like, Sting in his full red, white, and blue American shit with his, you know, blonde hair slicked back.
Going to take you to town in his pink Cadillac.
Still in the kid's voice, is like, wow, oh my God, all of this WCW action. And then it cuts to, like, loads of stuff of what's going to be in this month's issue. And then afterwards, it's adult Sting with, like, the same Sting, you know, from we've just seen, but now he's got his adult voice, and he's just like, oh, I don't know how, I don't know where they get all their stories from, or something crazy. And he just turns back into the kid with the deep man voice, and now all of Sting's makeup on. It's like a fever dream.
So is
it's
Sting
like something I'd see after working too much and then drinking half a bottle of Night Nurse and sleeping for 20 hours.
Is Sting the kid?
No,
is
the kid
Sting?
Is power imbued with the power of Sting.
Right.
And therefore becomes Sting. It's not quite got to the point where kids have summoned Sting, because it's like, you know, when you say Bloody Mary in the mirror three times and she pops up. Same with Sting back in the day. They had to kind of put a stop to it.
They had to ban mirrors for a while.
Because they'd summon him in for all these adverts and shit. But eventually he has enough of it and he does just wail on that kid for the game advert, beats the shit out of him in his living room, and then leaves. Do you not remember that advert?
I do!
Picks the kid up, and the kid's having the time of his life, just getting like slammed across the room. He's like, yeah!
Support WCW and Sting will come around and kick fuck out of
kicks
you.
Kicks the front door in. Even you're not fucking summoning me one more time, you little shit. Grabs him, hurls him through a door.
Even WCW wrestlers hate you watching WCW. Stop watching it! Piece of shit! It's did you ever
buy the real reason he goes all moody and goth? He's like, I'm sick of bringing joy to people's lives when they summon me to their houses.
Thank God Scott Hall told me about the movie The Crow. Did you buy WCW magazine? Was it ever available over here?
No, I was very lucky if I'd even be able to get a copy of Power Slam in our local newsagents. WWF magazine occasionally, But I think it was one of those ones where somebody had a sponsorship, but it was like a pickup sponsorship, so they didn't have to get it every month.
Right.
So there'd be like one copy if this person didn't go pick up their magazine, and you had to be quick. You had to be like super quick, because otherwise somebody else would get it. So, and even though you'd be like, hey, can you order this in? They'd be like, eh.
That's what they did.
Or you could subscribe for an exorbitant fee if you're a seven-year-old child and you don't have any money.
Send this check to Finn Martin. He won't cash it, I promise.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
WCW Magazine is really cool.
In the February issue, you'll see exclusive photos of World War III, including Ric Flair and Sting's brutal conflict. And is it a family feud?
I'm torn apart.
Or something more? Find out. Plus, the Macho Man, Randy Savage, speaks out.
That's right, brother.
Man, where do they get this stuff?
Get your copy now on newsstands everywhere.
WCW Magazine commercial ends. We come back. Flair on offense after the break. Savage has a few flickers of hope with a backslide and a roll up here. And
while we get Bischoff going, Miss Elizabeth will be reunited with Hulk Hogan, Macho Man Randy Savage, but it sounds like he's going to say Macho Man Rabin Sabin, and I quite like it. Rabin Sabin.
What would Rabin Sabin look like?
I don't know.
John!
Slightly more, I don't know, Wolverine-y.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bit like Wolverine.
Make him look like a lumberjack.
A Wolverine lumberjack. There you go, John. There's your brief. Macho Man Rabin Sabin. He looks a bit like Wolverine and a lumberjack. Have some fun with that. John's made a whole bunch of classic review characters on WWE 2K22, by the way. If you search John Eiley on...
I'll have to get them downloaded.
Yeah, get those downloaded. We'll put them in a Rumble. Flair's on offense, as we say. Savage can't quite get back into them. The match nearly gets ended when Flair almost gets ejected from the ring for bending the rules.
He almost gets ejected. There's a nice little back and forth with him and Randy Anderson where Flair shoves him and commentary like, that's going to cost him. He's going to get fined for that. And then Anderson just shoves him back and Flair can't believe that he's being shoved back. He's just kind of like, do I flop off it? Do I not flop off it? What am I doing?
And then Randy Anderson gets a fine. So
touched Ric Flair.
Yeah, you get loads more finage. Arn Anderson heads to the ring to use Nux on Savage, but Savage moves, which means Flair, who was holding Savage, gets a pace dig instead. Here comes Hulk Hogan to save nobody from nobody. He attacks Arn Anderson. At this point, the bell starts ringing. So I was like, oh, has this been thrown out? That's bullshit.
Yeah. Well, there was outside influence.
Yeah.
The match should have ended there.
The ref
legally.
Now, the ref even
it's
sort
in
of
da rules.
Potentially intimates that that is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But then Savage hits a diving elbow and pins, and the ref counts the three.
Yeah.
New world champion, Randy Savage.
Yeah.
Two times.
In the opening match.
in the opening match. Now, I don't mind the world title match being the opening match to weigh a proper.
I think if you're not going to make an event, then open, like, jerking the curtain shouldn't be, you know, bad. Yeah. It's, you know, you're going out there first to really stamp your mark on it. But
I like the idea that the concept of people turning on Nitro and opening, holy shit, world title match.
But like, that's just cool. The idea where you've got Arn comes down with the brass knuckles to use against Savage. And then that all goes sideways when Hogan pulls Arn off the apron. And then is it...
Now, here's the thing.
Is it revealed because the Jerry has passed the knuckles to... Or is that a later match?
No, here's there's another weapon involving a fist shaped weapon later on.
Twice in one night.
Yeah, when you heart your heart.
Jesus.
So what happens here is like, right, fuck off Hogan, because you did fuck all, mate. Because Arn Anderson accidentally twats Flair.
Yeah.
And then once that bit has gone down and Arn's like, oh no, I hit Flair.
Yeah.
That's when Hogan turns up, takes him off the apron. So Hogan stopped nothing from happening. The bell is ringing. Savage has hit an elbow. Hogan's outside the ring fighting with Arn Anderson.
Look how tanned he is, though, and how much the kids love him.
They love it. And do you know what?
He doesn't have a bandaged up arm that's definitely not real.
And you finish with a fucking diving elbow, the poor bastard. 3 count. Savage is the new world champion. Hulk Hogan, like a moth to a fucking flame.
Straight on him.
Does not leave within if this was a show during the COVID era, Hogan would have broke social distancing Savage.
It's at the point where you genuinely feel like Hogan's just about to say to him, just make sure I get that belt because it's going to be mine anyway.
Yeah.
Like, just, he's always got to be in and around or touching the gold. Or in or around that main event.
But only with Savage.
Savage and him, there's a complex history there. But it's just like, fucking, come on, man. Just leave him alone.
Let him alone. Yeah. Jesus Christ. It's like, I thought any minute now, Savage is going to twat him.
And
he
does turn around to him because there's the little mean Gene gets in the ring.
Oh, Gene gets
in. That little bit that happens every time. So Gene gets in the ring, does the usual questions. And then Savage, when Hogan's kind of still, you know, celebrating and mugging off like the heels and stuff, Savage just says something to the effect of, I won it, don't embarrass yourself. You're celebrating like you won it.
Yeah.
And then Hulk gets on the mic and he's like, well, you know something, brother. Eric said I'm getting it next, so just give me it now. And then Macho Man once again tells us that he's not Nick Bockwinkle. And then Hogan's getting roundly booed. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. And then he steals the oh yeah catchphrase, to which Randy's only retort is to turn around to Mean Gene and go, double oh yeah. And then point upwards.
They're going to have a world title match right here in Caesar's Palace.
Yeah.
But Hogan has to earn it first. By, you know, because as you say.
And how's he going to earn it?
He has to beat people. They're very vague on that. But he's got a match against the one man gang tonight, the United States champion. So that'll be an uphill struggle for Hogan.
Don't remind me.
That we can look forward to later on. And Mean Gene in the center of the ring shouts about Miss Elizabeth and Kevin Green as Randy Savage tries to steal a little bit of time for himself and holds up his new world champion. Because he's the fucking new world champion! But no, Miss Elizabeth and Kevin Green next week! You've just had a title change! Fuck-a-doodle-doo! Why? Why does Savage get shafted so often by so many people?
It's surreal, isn't it?
It's awful!
Genuinely
I feel
surreal.
For him!
But, you know,
God love him.
The taste of this shite out of our mouths, and we're going to move on to a lovely little match between Dean Malenko and Brian Pillman.
But even then, like Savage has the title, and Mean Gene's going, Brian Pillman and Dean Malenko, fuck, he's the champ. Let that be the final thought of the segment.
Evidently, the company doesn't give a shit.
Because,
you know, he wouldn't be on first. And second, it just nothing about Savage screams anything anymore because he's always accompanied by Hogan, who is always reminding him that belt's mine. So the crowd are just being conditioned for another Hulk run that none of them fucking want, and they're
and
roundly
they boo
booing.
Hogan.
But
every
Hogan's
time
just
he talks
through the boos now,
yeah,
it's just going on, and
he
they're
don't
just
care.
Pretended. It's like, you know, they don't quite have the machine that makes the crowd go whenever they want at this phase. So it's just like, fucking, come on.
It's so infuriating.
But yeah, we just move straight on into, you know, a straightforward normal Nitro match after this, showing you know, fuck it, because you could take that match off the card and put it anywhere or replace it with any other match. And yeah, Randy wouldn't have the title, but we know Hulk's getting it anyway.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Dean Malenko versus Flying Brian Pillman, as you say. Dean Malenko has just signed a 2-year deal with WCW, so they're keen to keep Dino Machino on the books.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Good in-ring technician. Somebody that, he's going to be very heavily associated with WCW in the future.
Mm. Brian Pillman has his own remix of the Horseman music, which I'd never spotted before.
Yeah.
Which I really like. And we're getting into a more iconic look for Brian Pillman.
Yeah.
That short crop top shirt and the cane.
The loose cannon really comes out in this match as well.
If you're a cameraman in WCW, you watch out, because he is going for all of them throughout this match. Shouting at them, pushing them over. It's a really easy way to kind of emphasize, you know, Pillman's lost the plot by having something that breaks the fourth wall like that, having Pillman pushing cameramen away.
Pushing cameramen, he's, you know, screaming that he's a shooter while, you know, mimicking a pistol. And, you know, like pinning somebody down and then like mugging off the crowd, playing possum and jumping right back up, giving up his pin opportunities to kind of gloat and taunt. Mm. Like it's all just starting to get polished up very nicely now.
They acknowledge Pillman's attitude adjustment as he continuously gets distracted by camera guys getting in his face. I'm a shooter, he screams as he rubs Malenko's face into the mat, and I've got a Full Metal Jacket. Nice little film reference there. Dean Malenko takes advantage of a lot of the times when Pillman is being a loose cannon.
Yeah.
And makes it technical once again. There's a bit that wakes Malenko up as Pillman goes for a very lackadaisical cover, only gets a two, and then Pillman sticks the four fingers in his face and slaps him across.
Yeah.
That wakes Malenko up. We then get a leg takedown, a suplex, a neck breaker. Malenko getting back into this one until Pillman hits a wonderful tornado DDT, which I thought was really nice.
I felt like Malenko couldn't get going in this.
I thought in that particular bit he did. He got a suplex, neck breaker, and...
Oh, yeah. I think that there were moments where it worked and it took off, but I think largely that was the story of it, wasn't it? Like this wild, like how do you work with somebody? How do you get somebody under control like that? And, you know, Malenko's offense is not, I don't want to say like slow and laboring, but it's a process being a technical wrestler. You've got to wear your opponent down. You need to have a strategy going into it, but how do you have a strategy for somebody that is completely wild? So it's, you can almost see at the end, he's a bit like,
what do I do?
Like shaken by it, not like to its core, but he's a bit like kind of like, how do I get that guy under control?
Like, I've not been in a ring with anyone like this before.
Yeah.
Despite the fact he hits a lung blower, a double underhook powerbomb, and nearly gets a tap from a late grapevine, he can't put Pillman away. The finish comes in a very unique way, where Dean Malenko...
Love this.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
So Malenko's on the inside, and Pillman's on the outside. Pillman strikes Malenko, so he ends up falling backwards, and he gets his foot tangled between the second and the third rope.
Yeah.
So he's tied up, he's on the ground like a turtle on its back. But with
doing this.
Yeah. Help me. Father, help. Pillman sees this. He covers Malenko in such a way where the ref can't see the entanglement of his foot and the ropes. So the ref counts the three as Malenko's tied up in the ropes. This is very cool.
Pillman just rolls out and cackles his way to the back as the referee realizes what's happened. And it's It's because that's it. It's like, you know, you can prep all you like, but you can't prep for that.
You can't prep for crazy.
Yeah, that's it. Crazy like a fox. So
crazy like a fox.
Yeah.
So a decent match. This kind of brought me back a little bit.
Yeah. A little bit of hope.
A little bit of hope in this one.
A glint of joy.
So off we go to the never-ending bollocks that is Sting and Lex Luger.
Or Harlem Heat versus Men Carsten is...
Men Carsten.
It's a Men Carsten and Sex Luber, I decided to call him today.
Sex Luber.
Sex Luber.
Sex Luber.
He could have been the pre-Val Venus Val Venus.
Do you know what? I would have preferred Sex Luber to Lex Luger. Sting's got new hair.
Yeah. Thoughts? What of it? What of it?
Thoughts?
Yeah.
Concerns?
No.
I prefer peroxide blonde.
I prefer... Crow Sting anyway.
Blondes have more fun.
Just wait until we get past this surfer happy Sting. I want to see painful listens to the Smiths Sting.
Well, we're on the road now. We've turned a corner. He's now a brunette instead of a peroxide blonde. Mongo, I love Mongo for this.
I mean,
and Mongo we give a lot of shit to.
Yeah.
But this was great because I like this is so true and people should hammer this home more. Mongo puts over the fact that Harlem Heat, the world tag champions, it's a world tag title match. They have the edge because they're a more established team.
Yeah.
And that's
and
true.
And they've shed the dead weight of Sherry. He makes sure to get that in, you know.
Yeah.
Like Sherry was really weighing them down with the whole Colonel thing. When they needed her, she'd never be there.
Mm.
And the thing with Mongo is I think he's often put into like weird situations because he's quite new to it still. And at the same time, it's like he fulfills that kind of weird color role, but doesn't. He kind of flits between, it feels. Like he's never quite established. One match he'll be sitting there kind of doing the cackling and you know the more traditional color aspect, and then he'll also be the guy that's kind of going, and of course, you know, 40 straight matches and no losses and all this stuff. So they tend to flit around a bit, and so often Mongo's left with just the kind of ha-ha and you know the crap bits on the end and the kind of side commentary. But yeah, you get these little moments where there's like flashing, like just give him a more defined role and he'd be perfect every week.
He can, yeah, give him those key lines rather than, you know.
But his personality is more what it's about with Mongo, right? It's that kind of the positivity he exudes constantly, no matter what crap's in front of them week on week.
Yeah. But I like the whole, I like the idea of it being about the fact that Harlem Heat are a tag team.
Yeah.
Even if you're two top singles guys,
yeah,
you have a fight on your hands against a top established tag team.
Yeah.
It shouldn't just be a case of the two top singles guys can beat a top tag team.
Yeah.
I always hated when that happens.
You need that psychology to be fed back to you. Because you're not, you know, unless you get really into wrestling, you're not going to sit there and learn about all of that and all of, you know, how it's structured and everything. You need that stuff there. Just to kind of, you know, Harlem Heat team to be, you know, taken very seriously.
Mm.
Go from there.
Exactly. I like that stuff. Luger gets a short beating before hot tagging to Sting. Booker spots Sting getting some offense in, and Sting going for a Scorpion Deathlock on Stevie Ray. He counters with a gorgeous axe kick. That was nice. Booker T's just the guy. He's ready to go.
He's not like Mr. Beat. It's surreal. Like, go back and watch it. And it's just like, shit, like he's still doing that. And it's still just like...
I thought you said then, he's not like Mr. Bean.
No. He's just not like Mr. Bean.
Oh, hello.
There's no farcical comedy in any of his matches.
Hello, Stevie.
But it's like, his style is his style is his style. Like, nobody can be Booker T. And that's, I think, you know, of course, it's the mark of a fantastic wrestler. But, like, down to the way kicks are delivered, the way he moves, everything, it's just... Could you imagine having Booker T on your hands? Running a wrestling company.
He wouldn't fit. Mine are tiny.
And this time, though, having Harlem Heat as a team. Fuck, man.
Oh, Christ.
Incredible.
With a
pull like, up against anybody.
Yeah. But he's so good.
Yeah.
And like and Stevie's there.
But Stevie in the tag capacity works so well.
Yeah. As a tag, yeah, there's work to be there. But like, it's with Booker T. Did you see his comeback at Reality Wrestling?
I've seen little clips of it, but I'm not. Yeah.
He's great. He's still... Clap, 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 you've still got it.
Yeah.
It looks amazing. It looks like he hasn't aged. He's like made of like granite.
Just a regimented person.
Yeah.
Like it's crazy, isn't it?
Committed to the bit, absolutely. After Booker's axe kick, Sting gets a shooing for a long time. He avoids a Harlem hangover and hot tags Luger, but the ref doesn't see it. And from here...
This is it. This is the one I was thinking of, because why would you just have one brass knuckle spot on the show when you can have a slightly different brass knuckle spot on the show?
As Jimmy Hart, who they acknowledged on commentary, is not allowed at ringside for this match because Luger's relationship with Jimmy Hart is only for certain matches, and why are we still doing really nuanced storylines with the wrestling acting equivalent of margarine?
This all stems back to before World War III, right? In like, what was that, October? So, I'm sure there was, heading into that, we still had, you know, Luger popping up, putting somebody in like a hold, and then Sting would run out and be like, Lexi, what are you doing? Stop it. And then, you know, like Sting would get into a bit of a situation and Lex would come out, and then Lex would just start appearing with heels. And then you had just the insistence of, I'll get into it all in a minute. Let's crack on. But, explain what happens.
No, okay, so... Because I'm thinking on this. I think I'm with you. We'll touch on it in a second. Yeah. So as he's complaining that the ref didn't see the tag, here comes Jimmy Hart. Lex is perplexed until Jimmy gives him some kind of weapon behind the ref's back. When Luger finally makes the hot tag, he clocks Booker with said weapon. It explodes on impact. It's a fistful of coins.
It's literally a fistful of dollars.
A fistful of dollars.
Yeah, it's silver dollars.
Ah! Just like that, Luger gets the three. He and Sting are WCW World Tag Team Champions, and Sting has no idea there were dirty shenanigans involved.
He's just like, yay! So there's a line here, and it's early in the match. And yeah, they crossed it. They crossed it about 7 months ago, and they haven't stopped full flat on the autobahn. The line was, I think, from Bischoff, but every time, or it might be Mongo, every time Sting steps in, he's got to wonder if he's got a friend in his corner or an enemy in his corner. And it would be the case if any of the build-up had really stuck beyond Hogan and Savage insisting that Luger is evil and out to get you, Stenger. Because that's it. They just keep popping up, and it's like, he's bad. Okay? And?
What do you mean
to do
about
anything
it?
With it? Because they've not done fucking anything with it so far. He just kind of does what he wants and stings his mate. The confusion largely stems, for me, from odd angles with Luger that were less mysterious in their nature and more just generally confusing. So you've got the whole whose side are you on thing still with him. But, I mean, Christ, like the megaphone last week. It's like, was that supposed to be quite as, oh, did he mean to do it? Or was that meant to be more like, oh, he did it. Like, yeah. And he accidentally hits Sting and it's weird. So there is that element there, but you don't need to hammer it home quite this heavily. And because there's so many things going on leading into this and how it's evolved and everything's changed, now we've got the Legion of Doom off with the Horsemen and they were feuding and now they're together. And Luger's just been passed around this entire time. But it just makes Sting look like a fucking moron. Mm. Because surely Sting would be like, what the fuck's going on? Like, why were you doing that? Why would, like, way back when he had a guy in a camel clutch or whatever it was, why wouldn't you let go of him? And it, like, the week after that, it was like, well, I'm not really sure what's going on with Lex, but we're on the same side tonight, brother. Is this the longest term storytelling in history? But, you know, drawing it out for months on end really hampered any excitement around it as well. And it feels like Luger was almost set to be maybe pushed up a level. Like, maybe, not like, you know, there wasn't anything major storyline wise, but it just feels like he's being kept in this bullshit limbo. They don't really know what to do with him. And it's just, the payoff's going to be shit now no matter what, because it's going to go one of two ways. And either we'll all boo Luger or we'll all cheer Sting. And those are the default things anyway, if he's set to be a heel. But it's just, like, it does fuck all for Sting and double barrel buckshot fuck all for Luger, because it makes Luger look even worse and even more incompetent, and like he has to cheat to win and he's not quite sure what his next move's going to be, and you've already got a much better loose cannon in Brian Pillman, and Lex is just still sat there. He's a body guy. Get him a fucking mouthpiece and get him out there.
This is it. This is a this is the one thing that we've come back to a few times. This is a storyline that is way above Lex Luger's pay grade.
Yeah, but why is he taking the silver dollars? And then I get a shitty victory and he's managed to convince Sting he's his friend. Okay. We need to see Luger do more nefarious things and get away with it then. We need to see him do stuff while Sting's distracted, or Sting isn't in the building, or Sting is, you know, out injured and he can't watch Nitro this week. Like, there needs to be more with Luger really sticking it to the fans that he's bad and Sting is convinced he's good, if that's the route you're going to go. Or is this just Randy and Hulk, like, getting in Sting's head a bit because they have genuine concern for him or whatever, and Luger's just kind of lost a sense of himself? There's no explanation. There's no nothing. It just kind of comes out week by week with the same fucking promo.
And with anybody
and Lex,
else.
Like, as much as this is going to sound ridiculous, Lex deserves a lot fucking better.
I don't think he deserves it better. I think he deserves different.
This is, I just mean in terms of, like, his storyline should be more simple, should be more straightforward. He should have a mouthpiece and get out there and maybe learn a few more power moves. Fucking do it, because that's what it boils down to eventually when he joins one of the many hordes of the NWO a few times. And it's just like, right, that's fine, because then Lex is just expected to be the big body guy. A lot easier from that point. Hell of a lot easier.
And that's fine to do.
Yeah.
This storyline is too nuanced for Lex Luger. If, okay, what Pillman's doing now.
It's too nuanced for the fucking writers, first and foremost.
I mean, like, give something like this to Pillman.
Yeah.
Pillman would have been able to tell you the
facially
story
express
facially.
It without saying a word.
And that's the big thing, I think, is the issue, is that he's a body guy, but the face isn't telling me anything. Yeah. And not in a way of like, oh, which side is he on? In a way that I don't even think Lex knows what's going on.
Yeah,
Lex comes across as a fucking idiot.
You can tell he's kind of stood there going, did I take my pre-workout earlier? What time am I going to get back to the hotel? It just feels like he's just sort of
glazed,
not present. But at the same time, I guess, you know, if you come into the company for, you know, to just get away from your current situation on much less money, and you're wanting to keep your head down, as you know, that tends to be the belief around this time with Lex. It was like, okay, I'll come in, less money. That's going to be shit anyway for less money. But two, you're just going to kind of agree to do whatever they want you to do. So surely some of the blame's got to rest with them and how convoluted this booking is and how terribly it's written.
There should be somebody taking Lex to one side and going, look, this is the story we're trying to tell. Here's some things that you can be doing to help us tell
Lex
that story.
Genuinely, NWA Lex, phenomenal.
Yes.
WWF Lex kind of falls on its arse. I mean, the
Lex Express, I'll Be Your Hero stuff did.
Yeah.
But then like Narcissus with Bobby Heenan
that was
as
great,
the manager.
But again, body guy mouthpiece,
as
and
you said.
It's like, I don't know, it's you bring him back in and I think he just needs something more straightforward.
This is buying a cow for milk, but instead asking them to do a jigsaw.
Yeah.
No, and that's no disrespect to their ability to do a jigsaw, but they can't do a jigsaw.
Yeah.
And Luger shouldn't be doing a jigsaw. Either way, they are, and they'll continue to tell this weird old story. Sting, mate, watch Nitro. You'll get the full picture.
You'd think that, like, he'd be watching the tapes.
You think they don't?
Yeah.
Instead,
him and Lex just go back to the hotel, do a bit of a workout, hang out by the pool, hop in the rent a car, and then on to the next town, brother.
Do you reckon this thing might go, oh, hey, Nitro's on a repeat? And Lex's like, no, don't watch it, don't
Lex
watch
is just
it.
Like, pull in here, I need to use the bathroom. And he gets out the car with a shotgun and like a bag with a big dollar sign on it. And pulls down a mask. I'm just nipping to the loo, and Sting's just like listening to Bon Jovi, just like, yeah. And then leans out and he's like, can you get me a Snickers while you're in there?
Yeah, sure, buddy.
And then you just hear like, ba-boom, ba-boom. And then somebody comes running out, loads of smashed glass. And then halfway to the car, oh, shit, runs back, grabs a Snickers, throws it in. Boys, all the bad stuff on the back seat and Sting's like, you good to go, man? Let's go.
Yeah.
Just cracks on.
Cheers for the Snickers. That's really kind of you. Main event.
I've got a bet for you. I've got a wager.
Go on.
Right. So the main event of this show is Hulk Hogan, of course. Versus the one-man gang.
The WCW United States Champion, the one-man gang.
Now they promised us two world titles, so it's the World United States Championship or something.
No, they get around that. I will defend them on that. They said the world title and the world tag team titles.
Okay.
I'm all for calling out WCW bullshit, but I will give them that. The Lex Luger stuff's still bollocks, though.
So, gang makes his entrance, Hogan makes his entrance, and when we get to the ring, there's about 10 minutes and 4 seconds left on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Right? As we know, every Hulk Hogan match has to end with about 5 minutes of incoherent run-in bullshit and promo work and posing. How long... This feels like a maths exam. How many watermelons could Randy Savage feasibly get up the stairs in the time it takes Hulk Hogan
to... The train leaves at 8:30. The other train from the other side leaves at 9:42. Who will reach the crossroads first?
How long is this match?
Okay, so... 5 minutes of bullshine. I didn't time it, so this is news to me.
10 minutes left on the show, the second that Hogan gets in that ring and the bell rings.
I'm going to guess...
So bell to bell.
From bell to bell. I'm going to guess 3 minutes and 19 seconds. An absolute guess. 3 minutes and 19 seconds.
3 minutes, 1 second.
Oh, I gave them 18 seconds too long.
And fuck me. Like, I know one man gang's on the downswing, but let's just get into it.
Yeah, all right, okay. Gang dominates for a bit. He hits a splash on Hogan. Wait, no, fuck. Hogan's back up. Punch, punch, bootleg drop. Hogan wins.
Yeah.
That's so it!
This was all Hulk, and it was a lightning fast stop through, like, 80s Hulk Hogan matches.
Mm.
It was, you know, tiniest little bit of offense from the heel. One big heel move to kind of go, oh, no, what's Hogan gonna? And then before... fucking Gang's even back up off his knees, Hogan's up, Hulk's up while on his feet, and then proceeds to, you know, leg drop, slam, leg drop, win. But like, as I said, I know Gang is on the downswing here, pretty big, but
it's a big fuck you to New Japan.
Size of the fucking guy. It is a fuck you to New Japan, but the size of the fucking guy.
Yeah.
Gang, like, again, he's not somebody that I'm saying could be like, you know, a world champion at this level, like at this stage in his career or anything else like that. Like, US championships, great for somebody like Gang. So why the fuck would you have Hogan railroad him for 3 minutes? I know it's Hogan, and I know that the shows go on for a set amount of time and there's only X, Y, and Z. You know, there's all these things you've got to worry about. But Gang gets in maybe 3 or 4 strikes and a splash. That's it.
Mm.
There's a couple of moments where Hogan is just poking his eyes or like kind of biting at him, and Gang is just swinging blindly at the air, which again works in the 1980s, works in the comic book era because like, the heel, look at him. But you'd think that you would have at least some element of that match make Gang look fucking strong. You would just think that there'd be something that rocked Hogan a little bit that would lead to a more realistic Hulk up. Because then, in defeat, Gang can still be the guy who, you know, rocked Hogan a little bit, and they can carry that tiniest little bit of momentum from that one thing, or that maybe 1 minute or so of the match before the Hulk up. They could have carried that through into like a maybe all right mid-card threatening heel role for him. But he's already lumped in with a load of shite anyway. And it's just like, fuck me. Like,
brother.
How can't you just, like, why wouldn't it be a case of, you know, Gang getting, is Gang like halfway out the door?
Not that I know of.
Like, because that's the only thing in my head. I was like, well, if he's going, then I'd get it, because it's just quick, done, get the belt off him, or well, brand. But, like, it's just the fact that there's not really anything.
And it's not even
Gang
a title
comes
match.
Out of it looking like a background comic book character from, like, the Street Fighter comics, who's just like, you'll never beat me, and then gets, like, one punch KO'd. Like, and then next week he'll be doing the same, you'll never beat me. And it's like, just Jesus Christ, make him look at least a little bit strong so you can put him in there, turn him against Ed Leslie or something and have him leave the dungeon and give them a feud. Fuck me, I'd take that over watching him get absolutely railroaded by an old man.
I can't help but think this is some kind of placating of Hulk Hogan, because
he gets the
Randy
fucking
Savage.
Main event because yes. Randy gets the belt.
Randy gets the world title. Okay,
fucking
Hogan, we'll put
Flair
you in the main event.
Flair versus Savage to open your show, and you've got Hogan versus One Man Gang in the main event slot. And yeah, I know, it's going to lead to a bit of a fucking stare down, and Savage comes out, and you've got the belt and all that anyway. And it just, fuck me.
So they've been doing this little thing in the Dungeon of Doom, in the Tunnel of Doom.
The Tunnel of Doom.
Where Zodiac has been holding back the Giant from attacking Hogan.
No, friend. Jet ski. Scissors. Brutus.
So, in the idea that maybe Zodiac is going back to his old friend. So why is Zodiac the first person to run out and attack Hogan here?
Because he's the only one who can be trusted to not actually want to punch him in the fucking mouth, is what I was thinking.
Is that what everybody else just wanted to properly
attack
him?
Because Ed will just be like, oh my God, you sold him so well, Hulkster. You know, just kind of like giving him the thumbs up after the match. Whereas I think everybody else would just be like, bah!
Just lay it in. Him. Hogan batters Zodiac.
Get
and
out of
Benoit.
Our fucking main event scene.
Here comes the Dungeon of Doom.
So,
here comes
hold
the
on,
horsemen.
Hold on. The Tunnel of Horses. Can we give them their proper
Sorry,
fucking
here
name?
Here come the Tunnel of Horses. Here come the Tunnel of Dungeons. Flair out there in a t-shirt because he didn't fucking lose the world title earlier. Here he is amongst the collective arseholes who can't fathom knocking Hogan off his feet. Even the Giant going, oh, I could smell you, Hogan. Savage is in the ring. The world champion is in the ring. And everyone's going, oh, Hogan, I'll get you. Get to fuck.
Why are we so
harsh to Savage?
The final call-off on this show is essentially get ready and get hyped for fucking Clash, you massive walking wallet. Like, it's terrible. It's just, oh, Christ. You've got just so much going on. But the thing is, as a kid watching this, losing my fucking mind. It's amazing. But the second you actually stop to look at it, it's like, hold on.
Yes.
What the fuck? No. Randy didn't get to pose. Randy didn't get to do much. He got to talk down to Hogan a little bit. But Hogan, with his hurt fifis, he gets to go on the main event without, you know, wins the... Oh, my God.
We end on a Savage and Hogan promo. Hogan's going to do... Hogan's do everything that he can to become number one contender so he can challenge Savage.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, everything. Before that, though, they've got Flair and Giant with Kevin Green and Miss Elizabeth in their corner. Savage says, the Giant and Nature Boy are meat. Yeah, not dead meat, just meat.
You're meat.
And to which I say, yeah,
I'm
they
gonna
are.
I'm going to put you in the fridge and forget about you.
Final hype for Clash tomorrow night. Don't forget, Kevin Green, Miss Elizabeth, Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage in that order.
Sick. You walking wallet.
See you tomorrow. It's a free show. Bye.
Oh, it's a free show.
Clash
Tune
is free.
Tune in, you walking wallet.
Because remember, they were
yeah,
pushing
the
fact that, hey, Rumble, you got to pay for. Don't buy our shit.
main event Rumble, of that, if you meet a wrestler, you've got to pay money.
You can stay for free and watch Hogan batter the one man.
We have a very powerful TV network that'll fire anybody that leaves.
Yes, we will. Well done, Hogan. Last bit of the night belongs to you and your mate. Now, there was one point, I think the last word was Savage. He went, oh, yeah. And I think Hogan kind of motioned to go back to the microphone, then went, actually, no. I'll give him that little bit of a break.
Oh, nice. So selfless.
What a selfless,
fantastic
prick.
The thing is, like, Hogan is walking blindly into this. Like, what's to come?
Oh, his eyes are wide open.
No. But he's walking blindly into what's to come.
Right.
But this entire period is doing wonders for that inevitable heel turn. Because people just want to see him gone. People are fucking sick of him. Like, already. We've got half a year to go yet. And it's just like, people are already sick of him. It's all building and building. And then, geniusly, it just flips.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, we're not going to be able to get enough of him.
Once he leans into it.
It's like this initial period of like, what are you doing? Is your writer's room all sea lions? Like, how is this all working? What the hell?
Is your writer's room all... I think it might be all sea lions.
I don't get it.
I get it. It's just Hogan's playground. It's just like Hogan was, I want to be the top guy, brother.
Yeah, but
you give Savage the belt, but I want the main event.
I figured that a TV network would be able to literally print off hard numbers to him and go, not fucking happening. And I get that he'd go, oh, well, I'll leave, brother. What's Vince going to do? Take him back after just running him into the ground?
No, because what Hogan always did...
Well, he wants to go become a Hollywood star, but that never really works
for him. But Hogan is always able to very much manipulate the figures to go, well, that's not my fault. It's XYZ fault. It's because you've got Savage as champion, not me.
Yeah, but I think if you had audible people booing and then just surveyed them and went, everybody fucking hates you.
There'll always be a reason.
You're getting a pay cut. Or go on holiday for a year. There's your options.
Brother.
Yeah.
We won't see that. Sadly, we won't see that. But we will have Clash of the Champions next week, which we'll talk about next time we are together.
A fucking Hulkster mobile in 94, man. Come on. And he's got a monster truck.
The brilliant Killer Kelly is my guest on Desert Island Graps this week. That dropped yesterday. She signed with Impact 2 years ago, then the world caught fire, and then she had visa issues, so she spent the first 2 years of her Impact contract stuck in Portugal.
Jesus.
Nightmare of a time. Imagine Portugal's very nice.
Oh, yeah, but yeah. I imagine raring to go now.
Desperate to go. We talk about her life and times. Her dad is a former F1 driver. Her mum is a former Miss Portugal. We talk all about her growing up in Portugal. We talk about her NXT UK run and why she left. Mm-hmm. We talk about sort of how she sort of dealt with the mental health. She's very open about that. She talked about being diagnosed with ADHD very recently. And she's coming to terms with that. And she's very open about everything. We talked about 2 hours, me and Killer Kelly. So you can hear that on the podcast feed right now. Anything you're working on that you can spill the beans on?
Probably, but I
your body's
not quite yet. I don't know when things are coming out. So that's the thing. It's like I've got a lot of secret stuff happening.
The secret,
a lot of
things.
Secret projects.
But when the secrets can be revealed,
like the black ops, but like that American slice of the American budget. It's like it's just $30 trillion a year. Where's that going? Don't worry about it.
Black ops just disappears down a tube.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden things happen.
Yeah,
that's all we know. If you want to be involved in the show, if you've notes, observations, questions, whatever, classic@coldaholic.com is how you do that. Also, he is at the Sam Driver on Twitter. I'm at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together we are at Coldaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to brother. I want a shot of the title, brother.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.